Hello, and welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. The past 5 years have been a roller coaster for the nascent U.S. offshore wind sector, punctuated by record-setting federal auctions that saw project sponsors commit billions of dollars for the rights to develop projects off America's shores, a subsequent wave of contract cancellations as the sector strained under the weight of post-COVID macroeconomic stress, the first deliveries this year of electricity to the American energy grid from utility-scale offshore wind farms. And there have been plenty of other leaps forward and nasty stumbles along the way. But for the majority of that period, the sector has had the benefit of a supportive federal government and a bureaucracy aligned toward ambitious offshore wind development goals set by President Joe Biden. All of that is set to change in January with the election of former President Donald Trump, who has long been vocal about his opposition to offshore wind energy. On the campaign trail, Trump promised to end offshore wind development on day one of his second administration, although the details of what that would look like have not been particularly clear. I'm Chuck Stanley, senior policy reporter for InfraLogic, and today I'll be speaking with Marcia Hook, an energy regulatory and markets partner with Clifford Chance's Washington, D.C. office. Marcia has substantial experience in the U.S. offshore wind sector, having worked directly on the financing for major projects off the East Coast. We'll be talking about the current state of the industry and what a second Trump administration might mean for the future of America's offshore wind fleet. We'll also be talking about the recent auction for areas in the Gulf of Maine, in which Invenergy and Avangrid secured rights to develop floating offshore wind projects off the Massachusetts coast. Marcia, thanks so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, just to jump right into it, for listeners who aren't familiar with your work in the U.S. offshore wind sector, can you share a little bit about your experience in these, in the sometimes melodrama of bringing this industry forward in the States?
Certainly. I've been fortunate to get the opportunity to advise a number of clients in connection with offshore wind projects in the U.S. That experience includes acting as Special Federal Energy Regulatory Counsel in connection with the tax equity financing of a major U.S. offshore wind project, advising an investor in connection with its investment in a U.S. developer of offshore and onshore renewable projects, and advising on the energy regulatory aspects of a proposed financing of an in-development offshore wind project.
So you've been deeply immersed in this sector as it's come forward and developed. I touched a little bit on the various ups and downs of offshore wind in the U.S. over the recent years. I wonder if you could share your sense of where the industry stands today and where investor confidence in the U.S. offshore wind sector stood going into the election in November.
Certainly. I'd say that prior to the election, there was substantial enthusiasm in the U.S. offshore wind space. As I've said previously, I think that the U.S. offshore wind market has reached a certain level of maturity that has really started to attract investors, not just in the U.S., but also abroad. And so we were seeing a lot of movement into this space, including investors that are developing offshore wind projects abroad. And we're seeing the U.S. market as a real opportunity to develop projects.
And as listeners are no doubt aware, Donald Trump won the election this month and he'll return to office in January. He's been very clear about his feelings toward offshore wind. You just spoke about stakeholders who are maybe invested in offshore wind outside the United States and were interested in investing in the U.S. sector. What does the election of Donald Trump mean? What are stakeholders expecting from the new administration? And what does this mean for the continued development in the U.S. offshore wind sector?
So to give a high-level answer, Trump's victory has undoubtedly introduced significant uncertainty into the U.S. offshore wind sector. At the same time, there's an understanding that there will be limits on what any president can do, which will constrain the impacts to offshore wind. And there's a cautious optimism that the new administration may see the benefits to the U.S. workforce and manufacturing industries that can result from the further build-out of offshore wind. So drilling down a little bit further onto the first half of that question, as you alluded to earlier, it's no secret that throughout his campaign, Trump expressed strong opposition to offshore wind projects, pledging to terminate them immediately upon taking office. I think he said something along the lines of, "We are going to make sure that that ends on day one." So it's a bit of a challenging narrative to come up against. As you can imagine, industry stakeholder reaction has been a bit divided on this point. Some industry stakeholders have voiced concerns about the future of offshore wind in the U.S. You see major players in renewable energy warning of potential delays and increased risk for offshore wind projects under the incoming administration. But at the same time, some industry leaders are cautiously optimistic. They emphasize the economic benefits and job creation associated with offshore wind projects, and they're hoping that these factors will encourage continued support and development, even under a new administration. And, of course, there's a significant question of what the Trump administration realistically can do to impact offshore wind projects, especially those that have already received their federal permits.
And so it sounds like the expectations or how those feelings by Donald Trump towards the offshore wind sector might manifest in actual regulatory and policy decisions seems a bit up for determination and kind of guesswork right now.
I think that's a fair assessment. It's always challenging to know how campaign promises and rhetoric will manifest into political reality under any administration, but this administration perhaps poses an even greater challenge than others.
Right. And you mentioned questions about sort of a difference between projects that are further along through the permitting process. During the first Trump administration, there were a lot of complaints about permitting delays for offshore wind. As we look towards 2025, you know, there are now a number of projects that are either very deep into the permitting process or they've received the green light from federal regulatory agencies for construction. How vulnerable are those later stage projects or even the ones that have begun generating electricity to a less favorable regulatory environment?
You've really hit the nail on the head when you ask about the different development stage of a project when you think about the vulnerability of the project, because how vulnerable a project is really depends on where the project is in the permitting and development process. So for example, you alluded to projects that are already in operation. Those projects are the least vulnerable. Once a project's already generating electricity, there are a lot less avenues for regulators to slow down the process of developing and operating the project. That being said, technically not even operational projects are completely safe. There could be things like added regulatory hoops to jump through in terms of continued operation, and even potentially changes to incentives that change the commercial value of the project. The second group of projects, which I think of as medium vulnerable projects, if you will, are the projects that have all their federal approvals and are getting ready to break ground, but they haven't yet broken ground. So those projects have crossed the finish line in terms of major federal permitting. So they won't necessarily see the permitting delays we heard about during the first Trump administration. But again, indirect changes could trip them up, right? If the administration cuts tax incentives or changes regulations governing BOEM permittees, it could throw a wrench in the development of those projects. Then there are the projects that are still waiting in the permitting process. Those are the ones that are the most vulnerable. If the new administration decides to slow walk approvals, like we saw during the first Trump administration, that could really challenge the development of those projects. The uncertainty makes it harder for developers to get financing and line up suppliers, and that can really challenge the continued viability of a project.
And so I guess that stands to reason the projects that have made the least progress through the permitting process are the most vulnerable to an administration that's not as invested in trying to make sure that these projects get speedy approval and begin construction. And so moving on, in addition to the recent election, just before the November 5th election, the Interior Department held its most recent offshore wind auction for areas off the East Coast that would host floating offshore wind facilities. Just half of the areas put up for auction were claimed in that process, and Interior has confirmed that Invenergy and Avangrid, the two winning bidders, were the only participants in the auction. How should we interpret those results, both in terms of development in the areas that were up for auction and for investor sentiment in the U.S. offshore wind sector more broadly?
I think it's a little bit difficult to know for sure what broader signals it sends about investors' confidence in the U.S. offshore wind industry, but certainly it's notable that that auction closed only days before the election. And certainly there was a bit of wait and see sentiment in the run up to the election by investors and developers in the offshore wind space. So while it's difficult to know for sure what all the drivers were that led to only half of the areas being contracted, it does seem to be an indicator that there was some trepidation with respect to the outcome of the election.
So probably some apprehension over uncertainty over the political climate, but I guess it seems like there could have been other factors as well, either with regard to, you know, concern over the broader U.S. offshore wind sector or the fact that these areas are suitable for floating offshore wind generation, which is a newer technology and less proven, especially in the U.S. Is that right?
That's right. There are so many factors that undoubtedly went into various parties' decision not to bid on those areas. And as you correctly note, because it was the first commercial sail for floating offshore wind on the Atlantic coast. And offshore wind is such a new technology. It's possible that was part of the driver, as well as concern about the outcome of the election and the general direction of the offshore wind industry in the aftermath of the election.
And again, with floating, this is a less established technology. These areas have just been awarded the conditional leases. I wonder, what, if any, progress would you expect to see toward developing these areas under the Trump administration, given everything we just said about the possibility of permitting difficulty? Could we see a complete freeze of activity on those areas? Might the developers hope to wait out for a more favorable regulatory environment? Or are there things that could be moved forward, even if they're not getting sort of the current level of support from the federal government that offshore wind has been seeing?
I think it's unlikely that we'll see a complete freeze in the development of these projects. As you note, when the leases have already been signed, there's been commitments made by these developers. And at the end of the day, these projects are long-term projects. Any offshore wind project in the United States takes a significant amount of time to develop. And so even if the developers get started today, in the best case scenario, this is a years-long process. And it could be that this is just a temporary, again, even assuming the worst case scenario that President-elect Trump takes a very adverse position to offshore wind, it's still just a temporary period in a very long development timeframe. So even though it's possible that we could see a slowdown, I think it's unlikely that we'll see a complete freeze in activity.
And so as those projects move forward to the extent that they can and to the extent that they can under whatever the regulatory situation is under Trump, one thing that we've heard at InfraLogic a lot covering this space is about the specialized infrastructure and supply chains that are needed to support the build out of a floating offshore wind sector. So to the extent that the current political environment slows development of floating offshore wind off the East Coast, should we expect to see a cascading effect in which sort of delays to developments of these first floating projects lead to a slower development of the supply chains and infrastructures and maybe sort of a lagging behind of the entire development of the technology in the States?
Absolutely. That's a really important point. And it is one of the biggest challenges facing the floating offshore wind sector in the United States. As you probably know, floating offshore wind facilities generally need a different level of specialized infrastructure, things like deep water ports and heavy lift vessels and manufacturing facilities. And looking globally, we've seen the cancellation of some floating wind projects due to supply chain issues. And so it's a supply chain and infrastructure that just doesn't exist fully in the United States and even globally. And that supply chain, that infrastructure will only grow if there's consistent demand to justify the investment. So if we see the federal government put the brakes on offshore wind, whether through permitting delays, cutting incentives, or other unfriendly policies, then that demand signal starts to decline and companies are less likely to scale up their operations to meet that demand. The challenge there is that the result can mean that even if the political winds were to shift again in a few years down the road, for example, if there's a new administration that's more pro-wind, those supply chain and infrastructure gaps will still be there. And that can slow everything down even more. It's not as if developers will be picking up where they left off. They'll be trying to essentially reboot a stalled ecosystem. So it's certainly possible that a slowdown now could have a cascading effect. It's not necessarily just about delayed projects. It's about a whole network of industries and infrastructure that will need to catch up. And the longer the delay, the harder it could be to get that momentum back up when or if the political environment swings back in the favor of offshore wind.
And you mentioned that projects that are either, you know, completely through the permitting process or most of the way, they face less risk from, you know, a less friendly regulatory environment. We've heard that there's a number of late stage offshore projects in the U.S. that are looking for equity partners. I think the sponsors have been quite open about expecting to bring on new investors. Does the greater political certainty of having the election behind us make it easier for potential buyers to put a valuation on these projects? And do you think it's likely we could see some deal announcements in the coming weeks or months following the election?
My sense is that we're still in a bit of wait and see moment. As discussed previously, it's difficult right now to predict how much of Trump's anti-offshore wind rhetoric will translate into tangible impacts on the offshore wind sector. Even though we have greater certainty about who the next president will be, that certainty isn't translating into greater certainty for the U.S. offshore wind industry or valuation of individual projects.
So even with a little bit more certainty over like what the overall posture of the executive branch is going to be towards offshore wind, potential investors are going to want to know really what the specifics of the policy environment going forward are going to be before they make long-term decisions in all likelihood.
I'd point to two different factors. One is just going back to that cautious optimism. While there certainly was some very anti-offshore wind rhetoric on the campaign trail, at the end of the day, there is a significant opportunity for the Trump administration to come in and be pro-energy, a pro-energy administration. And if you look at who is investing in these offshore wind projects, both in the United States and around the world, the companies that are investing in this space include names that some might traditionally think of as oil and gas companies, because those companies are now broadening their horizons and becoming energy companies. And if you look at the number of jobs that these projects create, over 1,000 per project, the knock-on benefits to the U.S. supply chain and industry, there is some possibility that folks in the Trump administration will recognize that offshore wind projects, just like any other large energy project, represent a huge opportunity for the U.S. economy and workforce. And so, again, there's the possibility that this rhetoric, however negative it may be, won't manifest into actually negative policies by the administration. But even if the Trump campaign or the Trump administration does follow through on the campaign promises and tries to take adverse action against the offshore wind industry, there's still a question of what that adverse action is. Is it simply slowing down projects that are in the permitting process, or is it finding a way to eliminate some of the tax incentives and other federal incentives that have been utilized to commercialize these offshore wind projects? So again, even though we have greater certainty on who the next president will be, we don't have certainty that that president actually will adopt anti-offshore wind policies or take anti-offshore wind actions. And if he does, what those actions might look like.
Right. And I'm sure a lot of the major project sponsors will be trying to push that message of the benefits of driving a broader energy economy going forward. Now, unfortunately, that is all the time we have today. Marcia, are there any other final thoughts you'd like to share with regard to where the offshore wind sector stands in the U.S. As we speak, or where it looks like going forward?
I'd say that this is an industry that has a long time horizon, and investors in this space, certain investors will be willing to continue to invest in the U.S. offshore wind space, even if there is a challenging political environment in the near term.
Marcia Hook, thanks so much for joining the podcast. Hope you join us again sometime real soon. I'm Chuck Stanley, and that's all for this week's episode of Crossroads, the Infrastructure Podcast. Be sure to rate us, like us, and follow us on the podcast application of your choice. And be sure to tune in next time. Thanks for listening.